funcionando. Seguimos. Empezamos. Hello, ladies and gents. I hope that the connection is strong enough on this. And if it isn't, please feel free to tell me in the comments. I'm just running a little experiment here to see if I can do it in this part of the house. Because in this part of the house, I can set the air conditioning on for a while and leave the room like a fridge, walk in and begin shooting, and then I don't start glistening and sweating like an Alabama Baptist preacher. Today we're talking about consistent daily action. This has been on my mind a lot, as you'll tell from like the videos that I'm uploading. On a semi-daily basis here and on Instagram. I'm into this. I'm into this, man. Like what we're doing on a day-to-day as being something that can have a cumulative effect over time. It's a way of using time to your advantage. So often we're told there's no time, life is short, it flies by so quickly, blah, blah, blah. And I'm like, that's all true. But time can also be, if it's used wisely, can be used to our advantage. And just as in a business, if the business is operating, you look at the timeline over which it operates, and over that timeline it accumulates profits. In other fields of endeavor, over a long enough timeline you accumulate strength, you accumulate skills. If you're going to play the guitar, you would say, well, you know, how quickly can I get good at playing the guitar? And the teacher would probably say, don't know what good means, you're gonna have to define that. And then they'll say, well, you know, how quickly can you start? And then how much time and how much effort are you prepared to dedicate it to it on a daily basis? At the moment, I'm back in Spain. I'm trying to relearn, I'm trying to get to grips again with my Spanish. But I'm in Ibiza, it's easy to be lazy here because pretty much everybody speaks English. So I'll go in and I'll speak Spanish and they'll hear my English accent. I'm blatantly English. They just look at my face and go, he's English. I'll say to them in Spanish, like, I need to practice. I have like a little set phrase, like, I'm a little bit of a lazy boy. I need you to help me practice. They go, ha ha. And then they remember that, then sets like a memory for them. Like if they're serving in a restaurant or it's something where I'm interacting with them frequently, and they'll go, okay, the brain goes, this guy's English, speak English. And then the other side of the brain goes, no, remember he said, he needs to speak Spanish. It has to be daily. I used to be immersed in Spanish. I was telling a mate of mine the other day, and she laughed because my Spanish is that bad now. But when I was a kid, when I was 16, I was in the local press for my Spanish speaking skills. Like it's somewhere in the whole of England, I'd got like this really high degree level. It's not degree level. Speak English, boy. I can't even speak my mother tongue, let alone anything else. I'd gotten a qualification, it's called a GCSE in England. We get that around at age 16. And it was like nationally recognized. And I'd got this award for it and I was interviewed for it and by like the press and stuff. And she was going, is that a true story? She was laughing. She was like, this is bullshit. You're telling me a stupid story. And I'm like, that's a real story. And now my Spanish sucks. But if I keep speaking daily and I keep watching the news in Spanish, if I keep picking up Spanish magazines, and if I keep practicing, it'll come back. What is it that you want to do? What is it? Mariana Menendez says, no, it doesn't. Fuck off you. It will. It's going to come back. What is it that you're trying to do? You know, so most people who are tuned into this, they'll be looking because they want to recover from trauma. But the way we think about certain subjects, it's like we take our brain out of the jar, the brain that we would usually use, and go, okay, I have a brain for this subject, but on this subject, the brain goes out of the jar. Trauma is one of them, because we have a lot of ideologically infected ideas about how resolution from trauma should be done. I've always had the attitude on this channel and tried to convey consciously and unconsciously, implicitly and explicitly, that you should look at this as like strength training or like skill training, but not strength training the American way. The Russian one, which would be to do a little bit, very, very frequently. What's his name? I nearly said Pavlov. Not Pavlov, Pavel. Those of you who are into your strength training, if you read the works of Pavel, he was really, really popular in the early 2000s. Great stuff, really, really good stuff, but it was focused on consistent daily action, not big adrenaline-fueled, psyched-up, pumped-up lifts. And in his writings, he'd say, you know, in Russia, we see strength as being a skill, and we don't think of going to the gym and working out. You just turn up, you do your drills, and then you develop the skill slowly over time of strength training. Anybody who's done like a progressive overload push-up program or a pull-up program will attest to the fact that it works. But you do have to be consistent, and it does need to be every day. This is how neural pathways are laid down. Whether the neural pathways are for you to regain your serenity and to overcome trauma and to become more focused on the future, a good, happy future than a painful, dark and unpleasant past, that requires training. That's a skill. That's a strength. There are new neural pathways that need to be laid down. I've warned you, pain has this totalitarian effect on the brain. Pain and suffering and trauma and despair burns deeply into the neural pathways because of the intensity of the experience. This is why psychedelics can work, because of the intensity of the experience. It's why intense pleasure can work, because of the intensity of the experience. But unfortunately, in this reality that we've all chosen to manifest into, pain is the winner. Pain is the winner. If you're looking to brainwash, if you're looking to control, of all the things, pain and trauma and despair is easily the most powerful way to burn into the neural pathway. So with this channel, I try to give you regular updates, put the neural pathways in your direction, but it's pleasurable. Like if I do a slightly harsh YouTube video, slightly harsh, people are like, goodness me, that was like a cold shower, but jolly gee, didn't I need it? And I'm like, guys, that was nothing. But what is one of the effects of long-term trauma that results in this thing we call complex post-traumatic stress response? Hypersensitivity. You can become very, very, very sensitive. You can become hypervigilant. You start like jumping at shadows and waiting for terrible things to occur. I don't have a magic pill to offer you. I don't have a dogma to sell. The only thing I know that works with almost magical effect is consistent daily action. Is every day you just put, I don't know, you put your 2 cents into the bucket every day. You put your little contribution every day. If it was a few times a day, even better. That's why on the Stop Emotional Flashback course, it's 5 times a day. I've seen elsewhere on the internet, people mocking it going, this guy thinks that tugging on your fingers lays down new neural pathways. And other people like, haha, lol, what a fucking loser Rich Grannan is. And I'm going, well, I am not a neurobiologist. I don't have a PhD in the subject, but perhaps a neurobiologist who does have a PhD in the subject would just like to point out that actually, if you do stop your normal daily activities and you do tug on your fingers, there's a little bit more to it than that. Thanks for the mischaracterization though, guys. Says a lot about your lack of character, I think. And you remind yourself, what is it that Stop Emotional Flashback course essentially tell you to do? Stop your normal day. Stop the normal habitual patterns of thought, physiological movement, thinking that you've got. Take hold of something that is inside of your body and remind yourself of what? What are the principles? If you look behind the curtain, what's the Wizard of Oz trying to get you to do here? Reinternalize your locus of control and to make statements back to yourself that how you feel counts. If you want to leave a situation, if it's not comfortable for you, you can address it and you can leave. If you need to say no, it's okay for you to say no. Well, how does that stop emotional flashbacks? Emotional flashbacks are like a disease. It's like shingles. How the fuck, like without the antibiotics, how's that? It's not, it's us. It's part of our software. And perhaps the reason why people get so hashtag triggered about this subject is because I'm offering back the locus of control and they're frightened. I'm going, there's the locus of control. Let's pop it back in to the engine where it belongs. The car's not running very well, is it? No, it's sputtering. I can't get anything done. It won't go over 40 miles an hour. The brake pads don't work, blah, blah. Oh, look, there's a bit of the engine. It should be inside the fucking vehicle that you're driving along, hanging out the window, waving it in the wind, going, my car's not working very well. So I come along and I take it out of your hand and I go, this thing, it belongs in the engine. That's how your life works when the locus of control is internal. Yes, you can affect your thoughts and you should. Yes, you can affect your physiological states and you should. Yes, you can affect how you think, how you feel, how you talk, the words you use and the actions you take. And if you take consistent action over time, you can generate the kinds of change in your life that you would really enjoy. that you would really like to see, that you would really like to feel. You will reap the benefits of sowing the of planting and then sowing those seeds over time. But it's over time. So instead of being at the mercy of time, we can use time. We can use it to our advantage. You can by having a superior understanding of how you work, of how your reality works, you can actually start to take a little bit of control over the system and have it work for you. And remember, in that car that I mentioned, there's only one person that can ever be in the driving seat, and that's you. People who are not codependently inclined or heavy fawn responses will hear that statement and go, what the fuck is this guy talking about? For those of us who are codependently inclined, who are fawn responders, that makes an awful lot of sense. We seek to not be in the driving seat. Being in horrible, nasty relationships with bad people, working in jobs that we hate, for bosses who are cruel, dismissive and harsh, all of that takes us out of the driving seat because we're no longer in control. Somebody else is. We are no longer the cause. We are at the effect of others. And this is a repetition compulsion. However you package it, however you try and pretty it up and wrap it up, it's a fucking repetition compulsion. We're compelled neurotically to repeat the trauma of childhood. We want a new dictator. We want a new boss. We want a new... We're so desperately craving a new abusive totalitarian dictator in our lives so that we're not driving the car, because we've now become phobic of sitting in the driving seat with the steering wheel in our hands and being in control. There is, as painful as it is, as despair-inducing as it can be, and as miserable as a life as it can produce, a certain reward in the abrogation of responsibility. It is not me, it is them. I am not doing it, it is being done to me. This generates toxic passivity over time. This is how childhood trauma can generate really awful toxic passivity over time. I posted a quote yesterday by Sensei Gabor Mate, the Hungarian genius, it was a quote from In the Realm of the Hungry Ghosts, talking about how unwittingly we manifest the trauma from childhood in our adulthood, and it can really make us live out pretty unpleasant patterns. Imagine anything that you go into. You see a religion that you want to be involved in. You see a business that you want to do. You want to do something to do with your fitness, your health. You want to get back into relationships. But everything you try and do externally, you're trying to do with the piece of the engine that should be in the engine in your hand and hanging out the window, and with you not in the driving seat, with you in the back. You're not even in the passenger seat. You're in the back going, well, this car keeps bumping into stuff. Bloody hell, this car is shit. I should see a life coach. Why is this car so shit? And it's like, dude, I need you to come back to yourself. You're numb. The trauma has numbed you. The trauma has caused you to recede in on yourself. I need you to come back to yourself, to come back into the space. It hurts. Like, if you've been iced out and you're frozen and the warmth and the feeling comes back. I don't know if you've ever experienced it. I remember experiencing it for the first time when I was 13. And I had a panic attack because I didn't know what it was. I was raised in Portugal. I was raised in a hot climate. So then I go to a boarding school down in Somerset. And the first winter, I go outside without gloves on. They're going, you need gloves. And I'm like, pussies. And then I get in a snow fight or something. And then there's no problem. Like, I just couldn't feel my hands. And then I walked back inside and my hands came back online because I was near a radiator. And I didn't know what that pain was. I didn't know how, like, if I remember being a kid and feeling like my hands had been put inside of a vice and were being crushed. And all it was warmth. It was life. It was life returning to my hands. But it wasn't a happy, clappy, joyous experience. It fucking hurt. And that's why I offer you pain and anger and sadness. Thanks for tuning in. I've been the Spartan Life Coach. I can't not. I can only tell you the truth and go, yeah, this particular operation, you absolutely have to go through it. It sucks. It sucks balls. You'll be like, but it's quick, right? All right. What? Yeah. I mean, relatively, you know, it's a couple of months. You're like, what the fuck? A couple of months? Well, you know, it gets better. It hurts at first. It's confusing at first, but it gets better, and it gets better straight away. Like, you'll feel the difference if you start on day one. By day three, you'll feel the difference. You're like, okay, this is not as bad. By day five, it's not as bad. What do I ask you guys to do? You can get the emotional literacy course or not. You can write your emotions down on the back of a fucking envelope for all I care, as long as there is some acknowledgement of how you feel, because that's who you are. We live in a culture, Pete Walker said this, he says this multiple times in multiple ways in the Tao of Fully Feeling. We are emotophobic. We're totally terrified of emotions. We're terrified of grieving. We're terrified of sadness. And I was just talking to somebody today and saying, you know, you're going to feel sad, and you're going to feel sad for a while, but sadness is okay. It's just a messenger from the emotions. But I know that this particular lady is pretty industrious, and I was like, you won't be operating at maximum efficiency during this period of sadness. Nobody's really sad and grieving and goes out and just like founds a multi-million dollar company in that emotional state. But why insist on always being operating at maximum efficiency? Why insist on that? Why insist on always being productive to the maximal level? Are you a machine? Am I a machine? Is there anything else to me other than my productivity? I hope so. But do you see how quietly the indoctrination has crept in? Do you see how quietly the ideology seeps into everything? People don't want to be depressed because they're frightened it won't make them good at their job anymore. People don't want to be depressed or feel their feelings because, and their top level fear, or for some people, not for all people, but for some people, the top level fear is, I won't be able to go to work. I won't function at my maximal capacity. And I'm like, you're a human being. You're not a machine. You're not put on the planet for other entities to harvest your energy. Though that is happening. That is the world that we do live in. That's not what you were put on the planet for. And you need to find ways of resisting that. And the first way to resist it is to understand it. You have the right to feel sad. You have the right to feel anxious. You have the right, whatever the so-called ugly or unacceptable feeling is, you have the right to feel that. We have social taboos about feelings. You're allowed to feel optimistic. You're allowed to feel happy. You're allowed to feel energized. You're allowed to feel hopeful. You must not feel anger, especially if you're a woman. If you're a woman, anger is ugly. And I'm like, well, I think IMHO, if it became more of a cultural norm for women to be in touch with their anger, then by various methodologies and systems, the world would be a happier place. Repressed anger leads to bitterness. It leads to resentment. It leads to what the SJW culture now calls microaggressions. Little bits and pieces of venom seeping out because you're not expressing the anger. You're not working with the anger. You're just repressing it. Eventually, it kills sex drive. Eventually, it kills hope. Eventually, it kills optimism. Your sense of humor will be one of the first things to take a swan dive. You become grouchy. You become irritable. You become confrontational. And before you know it, you're looking at what is potentially full-scale animus possession. Because good girls don't feel anger. It's an ugly emotion. It's not pretty to feel anger. And I'm like, maybe we should say fuck pretty for a minute. And hello human. Fuck pretty, hello human. That's a good one for a t-shirt, isn't it? Fuck pretty, hello human. People look at that and go, I don't know what it means, but you know, it seems deep, man. Maybe you should not. You see again, the ideology seeps in. I am a commodity. I'm a product. I should always be pretty. For who? For consumption. For consumption by other people. I am a product to be consumed by other people. I should be pretty. I should fulfill the societal archetype of what it is to be a good girl. Ooh, good girl programming. That's not good. But neither on the other side is good boy programming. You know, and dealing with unexpressed male rage. You know, which is something that I'm trying to do more of at the moment is deal with guys who are just angry, really, really fucking angry, and don't know what to do about it. And I'm getting the impression that they don't know where it comes from. And it's frightening. It's frightening. It's like, in my experience, female rage is more insidious. It'll come out as like passive aggression. A blast of like man's rage, you just go, I might die. This guy might actually turn up at one of my seminars and stab me in the neck. It's like, I better be fucking careful. Shouldn't laugh, because all day, every day, these things are manifesting and they're causing tremendous suffering. But that's the realm we're working in, man. This is the place of suffering. Lol. And all I can try and do is like reduce it for a very, very small number of people, relatively speaking, a tiny number of people who can stand to listen to me garble on and tell silly stories. So yeah, that's what I try and do. That is the best I can try and do. So consistent daily action. I would hope that I can sell you on two things. Here's my sales pitch as a salesman. Consistent daily action will trump any quick fix solution. It will trump always any thing that you've been sold or told is going to be the thing that does everything all in one go. Don't go with him, it takes months and years. Go with this one, it takes 2 days. I'm like, nothing is resolved in 2 days. If you've suffered for your entire fucking life, it's not going to get cleared up in 2 days. Ayahuasca will do it. No, it won't. Nothing can. There's nothing that's that fast. Everything will be lower down the hierarchy over consistent daily action. And the second sales pitch is, please seek to connect with how you feel. You live in an emotion-phobic culture that encourages you to be as productive as possible and encourages you to think of yourself as a product, to commodify yourself and to commodify other people. And if you're going to ask me if there is any use in a capitalistic sense to you being angry or sad, I will say no, there is no use. In fact, it is not useful. It goes against the grain of usefulness. But useful people tend to get used. Think about that. Tend to get used. If you have any questions, I'll take them now. They should be one sentence long and they should end in a question mark. If they begin with the word question, then I'm going to say the word question like Beyonce. Donna says thank you. You're welcome, Donna. Happy to do it. How do I deal with a covert sociopath at work who is everyone else fooled and has already got two of my workmates fired? I don't know. I don't know how you would deal with somebody like that in that circumstance. Probably the best thing to do is to make sure that your locus of control is functioning very well, and then explore all legal and structural options first and foremost for letting the people who need to know, which is your management, exactly what's going on. All the chat's disappearing. I'm gonna start poking at this phone, which is gonna make it wobble, and then you'll get seasick. Hey, lol. Anger. What's your best way to deal with anger? Emotional literacy. Honor the anger. Say, hello, anger. Say, hello, I'm really fucking angry today. Hello, anger. What do you want? Where am I not protecting myself? Where's the area that needs defending right now? Who are you trying to kill? What enemy are you trying to destroy? Thank you, anger, for coming here and protecting me. It's good of you. Unfortunately, in this day and age, I can't bash anybody's head in with a sharp rock. So if we could explore the options, that's how I speak to my anger. My fight response was absolutely terrible. So, so strong. And I used to get into full-blown adult temper tantrums. And it was getting to the point where, like, I'm going to end up in prison or shot. Are you planning on coming to Australia? Yeah, at some point, definitely. I like Australia. I completely vouch for the emotional literacy course. Changed my life in 2 weeks already for so much the better, says Human RM. Thank you, mate. Checks in the post. Lol. Not really. I didn't pay him to say that. No, seriously, thank you. It's always good getting the feedback on the emotional literacy course. What's the difference between the Repat the Inner Parent course and the Heal the Superego course, please? The Heal the Superego course is the most updated version of things. I'll tell you the truth. I was somewhat naive in the way that I used to present my material up until about 18 months ago, where I really got to grips with it. When I looked at the statistics, because I can see how much people are using which parts of the course. So say me and my naivety, I'll go, oh, here's how to whatever, reduce anxiety. And here's 5 videos and 4 audios in a PDF. What happens? 90% or 95% of people watch video 1, 70% of people watch video 2, 40% of people listen to audios 1 and 2, 5% of people open the PDF, and I was like, ah, fuck. I was like, they're not doing what I want them to do. But like, my background is, you know, we develop awkwardly. We develop in a non-linear way. And just because of like my background and where I've delivered courses and who I've delivered courses to. So my original writing style is from my school and from university. That's why I wrote the most. And back when I was doing martial arts, somebody pointed out to me, is like, the way you write is so different to the way you speak. You're really boring when you write. and you're preachy, you're didactic. And it sounds a little bit pompous at times. I was like, that hurts my feelings, but thank you for your feedback. So I have this sort of way of being like, okay, I go into another mindset where I'm like, okay, you want the solution? Here's the solution. Now, there is a percentage of people that has no problem with that whatsoever. They'll just go, okay, tick, 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 thank you, thank you, thank you, thank you. They reformat it for what they need, which is what I just expect everybody to do, and then they use it. On the Heal the Superego course, the content is actually not massively different, but the intent and the process you go through is hugely different. So I was like, you must do it. And so with the Heal Superego course, there's a week one, week two, week three, week four. And I'm like, the only way I can guarantee that people are up to a certain stage when they listen to this, because some of the material, well, the stuff on the Heal the Superego course that is different is quite hard to hear. It's quite confronting. I mean, it needs to be. I'm trying to shatter the way people are thinking, feeling, and acting. So it's tough. It's not very strokey. But so I need people to be emotionally stabilized before they get there. So if you go online and you see people saying, "Oh, the Heal the Superego course is amazing," blah blah, I basically found a way to convince people to do what I told them to do. But it's dumb of me or of anyone. Like, if any of you are teachers or coaches, don't just tell people to do something. And in a way, if you think about it, that's lazy. Like, I go, "Oh, I told you to do it." Well, you fucking know that people aren't going to do it. So it's kind of a cop out to go, "Well, I told them to do it. And did you know that they wouldn't?" Yeah. Well, then did you do your job? Obviously, I can't come round to your house and do it for you, but I should, and always will from now on with courses, be like, this is what to do. This is how we do it. Come with me. Step one, step two, step three, step four. And to be sequential. So I can say, if this person followed this for a month, they're guaranteed an outcome. And I think that's why the response to the Heal the Superego course was very strong. The Repatterning the Inner Parent course, some people loved it. And it was like the thing that just fixed them. Other people found it triggering. They found it hard to listen to. Also, it uses the word parent in it, which again, that was my naivety. I was like, oh yeah, people like this. So there's projection. I mean, I'm a human. So I'll go, if I like this and I have CPTSR, everybody's going to like it. And what I'm reminded of time and again, and it's humbling to be reminded of it, is like, no, you human to me, are in a solipsistic bubble that you can't break. We're all in solipsistic bubbles. I live in the reality tunnel that's me. And I'll look at something and I'll go, well, that would work for me. So therefore it should work for everybody. And nowadays, you know, I'm more along the lines of saying, I can't produce courses that work for everybody. Nobody can. It's just a course. It's a book. It's a video. It's an audio. If you do it, you're going to get really, really strong results. But how do I make you? I can't make you do it. And I shouldn't be trying to make you do it, because the locus of control should be yours. So there's a little bit of new material there. But I think the key principles are the same. It's just... It's more structured and it's more realistic in like, okay, I know that people will watch a 10-minute video and then like maybe 7 minutes of audio every day. That I expect people to do. So on Sunday, you watch your 10-minute video and then every day that week, you listen to a 7-minute audio. They'll do that. They'll do it because you can stick it on your phone. You can listen to it while you're driving to work. You can listen to it while you're doing the dishes. Everybody's so fucking busy now. The other thing that I'm aware of, and any of you who are... Who work in business, or if you're a coach or a counselor, people really value their time right now. So when you say, I need you to do this, on one level, they'll go, great, thank you. I'm so glad that you're helping me to do the thing I want to do, but you've also just become the enemy. And at an unconscious level, you're like, oh, you're trying to steal my time, are you? Fuck. So you need to be sensitive to that. Sensitive to it, wise to it, just work around it. Stacy says, what? Most don't do all the coursework? You wouldn't believe the stats. Not with my material, but I remember listening to some stuff by Dan Kennedy on information product usage, and it's really, really, really appalling, which is one of the things that I heard, and it made me change the way I wanted to do online courses, because not my material. People are much keener, much more motivated when they buy my material. But say if somebody buys a weight loss course and they give $150 for a weight loss course, and there's 20 videos. The stats on that are like almost 0% watch all the videos. And within, apparently, I didn't know this, but apparently within information product world, that's known. That's just like, no, people buy the idea of doing the course. Then they get like a, what is it? Endocrinologists help me. Is it a dopamine, serotonin, endorphin release? I bought the course. I'm going to begin the course. I tell three of my friends, I'm doing a course. It's going to be fucking great. And your brain goes, yay, we did it. And then you watch one video the next day. And then the day after that, you're busy. And then it disappears. But you kind of got you give yourself the payoff too soon. And then that's it, it's gone. How do you discern? Well, it's a long one. How do you discern between healthy, helpful, creative, mythological thinking in terms of dreams and analysis and backward thinking, which can shackle your mind and give your power away? I don't know. Does it ever shackle your mind? I suppose if it's becoming, like if you've lost your grip of reality and you're using it as a way of sort of like mental masturbation, that's when it becomes problematic. You know, are your socks on? Did you pay your phone bill? Is your rent up to date? Are your dishes washed? I don't really want to hear what you've got to say about Norse mythology, unless all of that is done. I don't really want to hear what you have to say about life coaching, personal development, spiritual, Jungian archetypes, unless all of that is true for you. And I think we need to be humble and realistic and just go, okay, you know, have you covered the basics? Did you brush your teeth today? Have you blown your nose? Seriously, because there are people out there who, you know, and they know their stuff. It's like, it's not like they don't know, but I'm like, you're not living any of this. You're not living any of this at all. And you're presuming to coach people. And that's dangerous because you're a dirty cop. You're having people drink from a dirty vessel. And now your projections, your weirdness is going to get mixed in with their recovery process. And it can really fuck people up. So as long as you're in touch with reality and you're not trying to escape it through wanking your brain off, that's going to stay with me for a while. I just gave myself a hideous image. And you're not wanking your brain off, but you're actually dealing with reality and you're feeling your feelings, then you should be okay. Your intuition will let you know whether what you're doing is neurotic and escapism and spiritual bypassing, I think it's called. But you do need to be emotionally literate for your intuition and your emotional intelligence to be functioning. Let me say that again. You do need to be emotionally literate and in touch with your emotions for your intuition to function. Your sense of picking up red flags, of working out what's going on in a room, reading other people's body language, seeing who's good, seeing who's not, is massively blunted by being emotionally illiterate. Your decision-making process is damaged by being emotionally illiterate. Seek emotional literacy. Make friends with your feelings. You will be smarter for it. What do you think about Matthew 19:17? My scripture is not that good, sir. I don't know what Matthew 19:17 is. Maybe if you tell me, I'll tell you. Should one in mid-30s with the CBTSR BPD focus on getting out of minimum wage as low wages are making life suck? What the bloody hell, why did it disappear? Hey, somebody else needs to write a message. It disappeared on me. Soz. In terms of practical daily life, you should do both. You really should be looking at external factors and internal factors at the same time. Like if you're in a job that you hate, that is like really, really doing your head in, you should be spending as much time finding a better job as you are like working on your emotional literacy or psychological stuff. Absolutely, because it's really hard. You can create environments and live in environments that where it just makes recovery really, really difficult. Being in DBT for a year, exceptional stuff, says recovery would crash there. I consistently hear good things about DBT. I'm not surprised. I mean, they focus on critical thinking, radical acceptance, and they have a Zen-like mindfulness approach that puts you back in the present. And the BPD, CPTSR, secretly it's CPTSR, structure depends on like really being stuck in story, really just being in the head, stuck on projections, stuck on stories, stuck on the past. And so that alone, that Gabor Mate quote that I gave you before from In the Realm of the Hungry Ghosts finishes with that. It's like, I'm really savagely paraphrasing now. Mindfulness, present-centered awareness is the only thing really that can give us that fire break. It didn't say fire break, but that gives us a fire break from the past so that we can heal. we've got to be mindful. We've got to be present. We've got to go into storylessness. How do I emotionally deal with people lying next to you on the beach when the beach is empty? Is murder valid? I mean, you know, it's up to you. I think based on ancient Persian law, there was one about the beach, but you can only kill them using your left hand, and you have to use a wooden spoon. So, you know, I didn't write the laws. I just fucking live by them. Any advice for improving social skills? Well, that's an interesting one. He's going to be boring. He's going to mention stopping emotional flashbacks, isn't he? Yes, he is. He's going to mention emotional literacy, isn't he? Yes, he is. You've got to be able to read people's metacommunication. You've got to be able to read the energy in the room. Good stand-up comics are good at this. They respond to that which is there. Good public speakers are good at this. They respond to the energy that's given to them. They don't just rigidly do what they're doing without feeling what's there in the room. But if you're emotionally illiterate, you won't be able to feel what's in the room. So you want to be emotionally literate. You want to feel what's there. Listen, somebody said this. Steve Carell said this about doing improv. I think it's advice that he got from Will Ferrell. And he said, when you're doing improv, the way to do it well is don't just be thinking about what you can say next that is going to be funny. He says you should be 50-50. You should be thinking about what you can do next, but you should be listening. He says, so listen. Really listen. And that means not just listen, but like, you know, yin, state, receptive, assess. What is here? Take away the story, take away the prejudices, take away my thoughts. What is it really here? This is what I thought would be here, but now I'm in the room. What am I feeling now? What am I feeling now that I'm actually here? This is a good way to start working on your social skills. Ultimately, you need to practice. You need to speak to people. And me at the moment, it's something that I am, because I've deliberately chosen to spend quite a lot of time on my own. Then when I'm around people, I do need to be talking to people so I don't lose it. So I'll have things like just start talking before you think about it too much. And, you know, I just set the unconscious. I'm like, let's have a short, friendly interaction that conveys a lack of threat, that conveys some sort of solidarity to the environment, whatever's going on around us, and that they can get out of easily. So they can also be like, haha, yes, that's nice. Thank you. And fuck off. You know, so they could sort of just go, okay, yeah, I see where you're coming from. Haha, blah, blah, and finish. And it's away. Which is why when I was telling you the story the other day about me drumming up a conversation with somebody in a gym changing room that I wouldn't have normally done, that's because I did 6.5 hours of driving and my brain had melted. I drank way too much caffeine that day, but I'd actually also been running an unconscious program on myself saying, talk to people, have a friendly interaction with people, just boom, 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 boom. Just quick, friendly interactions with people. Also, like one of the other reasons for that is like if I walk into a place and I've been on my own for a while, I feel like people sort of respond to me in a way where I seem threatening. And I'm just like, well, maybe the energy around me has just got a bit heavy and a bit dense and I'm like in my own head and I'm just like, And that's because I'm not going to be like this, obviously. I'm not going to be animated. I'm not talking to anyone. So I'm like, well, you need to break that because you don't want people to think that. You don't want to seem like some heavy, intense dude, because I'm really not. I'm just inside of my own head. So it's reaching out to other people and giving them, you know, building bridges, the chance to sort of chat. Keeps you going as well. Like, you know, if you don't talk to people for a long time, you get weird. Who was it? I think it might have been Takamatsu Sensei. One of the higher ups in Togakuriru Ninjutsu was talking about going out into the woods and doing their process. Everybody should go out into the woods for a period of time for like 30 days and do some fasting, do some meditating, but you have no human contact. But you need to do exercises, and he used the term, so your heart does not grow cold. You don't want to end, because you'll, you know, like a Musashi, like a Miyamoto Musashi, fasting, meditating, just thinking about killing people, and his whole life was just like how to be really, really good at killing people. And we remember him, and you know, he was a great tactician, and he, you know, we still read his books and his words and draw inspiration from it. But what a shit life. What a shit. He died living in a cave in Japan, and like people who loved his work, they just come up and walk up to the cave and give him some rice, and he'd chat to them, and just that's shit. That's not good. Gina Roo calls it the lone ranger that becomes the weird stranger. I like that. Is human contact simply using other people and being used by them? No, dude. No. That's not what human contact is. There is a transactional element to all human interactions. If you've become emotionally illiterate, you can interpret that as being using a It's not using. Don't think of it like that. Because it's a transactional element. That's a framework that we place on it to understand it. But love can be, has a transactional frame to it. It doesn't mean it's actually literally a transaction. When people are extremely traumatized, and I'll end with this point, I've noticed there's a tendency to see things very literally, and things that are poetically understood, philosophically understood, implied through nuance and subtlety, they just it doesn't work at all. They need to be told like literally, like this is this. If you know somebody who's like that, it could be because, and they're also get poor at reading metacommunication. Like they don't understand if a joke is a joke. Ironic, an ironic smile, a wink, tongue in the cheek kind of thing. They're just like, is he twitching? What the fuck is he doing? What's wrong with his face? Why is he winking? Maybe he has something in his eye. You know, so being able to read jokes becomes a problem. For some people, this is a real long-term issue. It's got different names in the literature. I know of three different names for this. I would just call it a response. If we give it a name, it makes it, you know, concrete and that's the way it is. I don't know what it is. It's a response. It's a response. Like if you're broken away from human contact for long enough, you become, there's like a mental rigidity that can come along with it where you need literal communication and nothing else will do. You're just like, I'm not dealing with nuance, thank you. I need something literal right now. Ladies and gentlemen, thank you very much for your time and your attention. I hope that was useful. Please do like this video. Oh, it means much. And subscribe. Oh, it's wonderful, beautiful. And if you did like it, please post a comment. Please be respectful and kind to each other and to me. We're all actual real humans here. It's not just glowing pixels for you to batter with your internet winky. Great. Thank you for your time. Thank you for your attention. And I look forward to being. Cheers.